Hello, ODAC fans, and welcome to episode 2 of the ODAC podcast. My name is JJ Nekloff. I'm the associate commissioner of the ODAC. And as always, I've got with me the commissioner of the ODAC, Brad Bankston. Brad, how are you today?
I'm doing great, JJ. Happy to be here and excited with our recent news of hosting NCAA championships again. It's something that we've done here for many, many years, and had a great partner in the city of Salem and also a great partner in the city of Greensboro, North Carolina, for some of the events that we've hosted over the years. And we had another batch of bids released yesterday.
So just for our fans to know that are listening here, we're recording this on Thursday, October 3rd. On Wednesday, the NCAA released a two-year rotation of championship hosts and venue sites for the 2026-27 and 2027-28 academic years. That's a departure from what they had previously done. Normally it was a four-year rotation, but that's one of the changes under the leadership of new president Charlie Baker. So we're seeing a two-year rotation. The ODAC has a little bit of a lighter slate, but some ODAC schools are getting involved with it here now. Coming back to Salem is the Stag Bowl, the Division III football championship. We had it this past year, and it was very well received, and so it's coming back in town. This will be the 27th time the city of Salem and the ODAC have hosted that. Swimming and diving, we have both years of this two-year agreement, so that'll be good to head back down to our friends at the Greensboro Aquatic Center and work with them on that championship. And then we've also got the women's basketball semifinals right now in 2028, and that's because it's going to be a joint championship between Division I, Division II, Division III for their championship games in Indianapolis. There is conversation that they could add the quarterfinals onto our group as well, so we have eight teams. But then we have schools that are getting involved in the hosting ranks too, and I love to see that personally because
it's fantastic.
It's nice to spread around. We've got some great facilities, some good partners to work with. Start with indoor track and field at Virginia Wesleyan. They'll be hosting at the Virginia Beach Sports Center. I apologize if I butchered the name there on that one, but they've hosted at that facility before, and it'll be this time where it's expressly Virginia Wesleyan is the name co-host and sponsor for that, and they'll do an outstanding job hosting that there at the Virginia Beach facility. We have volleyball. It's going to Randolph-Macon with the Henrico Sports and Entertainment Authority, I think is what it is, at their sports and event center.
That's exactly right. Brand new building. Certainly interested in getting involved in NCAA championship hosting and happy that they received a bid, had the opportunity to host there, and know that both Randolph-Macon will do a great job, and we know that Virginia Wesleyan will as well because, you know, as you know, one of the first things, the foundational moments of hosting a championship is the facility itself. Does it fit the event? And in both these situations, both of those facilities will be perfect for both the track and field and for volleyball.
Well, and we speak of facilities, and we'll talk about the interesting one, the kind of outlier here. Guilford College is the name host of water polo. And water polo is national collegiate, which for those people that don't understand that, it's non-divisional. It's basically everything is all in one division because there aren't necessarily enough programs to do that. We have the same thing that happens in the men's volleyball world where we have Division III men's volleyball, but then there's also the national collegiate, which is Division I, Division II combined together, and they all compete in that sort of scenario. So lots of Division III programs. But the water polo at the Greensboro Aquatic Center, so another great venue for that. I have never personally watched a water polo match in person, but this will be the women's water polo event, I believe, in 2028 when they'll be down there in Greensboro. It should be very interesting.
I'm going to bet that the athletic director at Guilford, Bill Foti, may not have ever seen a women's water polo match, but who knows? I think this is a really unique kind of organic result of the relationship that Guilford has had with the Aquatic Center in Greensboro, the relationship we have had with the Aquatic Center in Greensboro, of course, hosting our championship there for many years in a row. This is a product of David Hoover, the administrator there, reaching out saying, hey, we've been approached with bidding on water polo. We want to do it. Can you do it? It didn't work for us with the timing for us to be able to hop in there, and encouragement of reaching out. And I said, David, reach out to Bill. Reach out to Guilford and see if this is something that they're willing to do. What we found, and I think, JJ, you would agree with this, is that when we go to Greensboro for swimming and diving, they have an amazing staff. Mm-hmm. And the work that we have to perform while we're there, frankly, is minimal compared to some of the other events that we've done because of the staff. And I feel like the same thing is going to be true for Guilford as well, right? It's going to be administrative support. It's going to be athletic training support. It's going to be some other kind of ancillary pieces. but actually getting in the way of what's going on in the water polo match or knowing what needs to happen, they're going to be able to take a side, ride in a sidecar, I think, in that and be able to make that work. So super excited about this, excited for all of our partners who work really, really hard creating the right environment to host and providing memorable experiences for all the Division III student-athletes who are out there.
And we would be remiss if we didn't talk about what we have on the slate this year. Before I forget about it, it's Washington and Lee that will have the first one hosting the field hockey championship. The ODAC and Roanoke College are the home of men's and women's volleyball this year, so we're in a good spot with both of those sports being played at the Kreger Center. At the same time in March, we will have swimming and diving down in Greensboro and the women's basketball semifinals and championship in Roanoke, so we'll have to figure out how that's going to work, splitting the staff. And then new that just came about recently because it was supposed to be in Towson, we're going to have not just Division III but Division II women's lacrosse at Salem on Memorial Day weekend. So it'll be an interesting take for us. We look forward to having a couple more things next year, which I think softball is coming back to Moyer next year, which
it is, that's right.
With that outstanding renovation that they did. So looking forward to that, but I started with field hockey, so let's get back to field hockey with this conversation here, and we'll really turn to the first of the athlete interviews that we promised our fans that we would do this coming week in the show, and that starts with Taylor Swan, who's the goalkeeper for Shenandoah University field hockey, nationally ranked. I think, I apologize, I don't remember the poll. I've looked at so many polls over the last couple of days, it just kind of all gets, you know, muddled in my head, but 14-15 in the rankings there, along with Lynchburg, which is right there with them. But a highlight victory during the week that Taylor was named the NFHCA National Player of the Week was that they beat the number two team in the country, Salisbury, 1-0. So Taylor, talk to us a little bit about that and a little bit about the program in general and why she loves playing field hockey. We happened to talk to her earlier today, so this is a recent interview that you get to listen to here now between us and Taylor Swan. We're joined with Taylor Swan, the goalkeeper for the Shenandoah University field hockey team. Taylor, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing well. Just to let our fans know, we're actually recording this on the day that we're going to post the podcast on Thursday, October 3rd. Taylor, let's introduce yourself a little bit to our fans here. Give us a brief, 15, 20-second snippet of who is Taylor Swan and what does she do?
Hi, guys. I'm Taylor Swan. I am currently a senior here at Shenandoah University. I am the keeper of the team, and I have been playing this sport for way too many years of my life. Since I can remember, I've always picked up a field hockey stick. Here at Shenandoah, I'm an exercise science major, and I'm going to be doing athletic training, the master's program here as well.
Well, congratulations. And I kind of like that, the keeper of the team. You're not the goalkeeper. You're the keeper of the team.
We need more athletic trainers out there, too. So keep up the good work in
definitely.
That space, too. Yeah, do that. Keep doing that.
So let's talk about the thing that kind of gets us at the forefront for you personally, but also obviously a team aspect here. You were named the NFHCA Defensive Player of the Week, not this past week, but for the previous week. And that comes on the heels of you getting two victories in that week. I think it was two shutouts, but the big one being an overtime 1-0 victory over then the number two team in the country in Salisbury University. Tell us about that week. Tell us about winning the award, what that meant to you, what that meant to your teammates.
That week has been the best week, I would have to say, of my life. It was just the team atmosphere. We were so locked in that week, and we all just knew that we wanted to win that game. We wanted to do anything to make it possible. It was just such a very big team week, and we were just all ecstatic that whole entire week. We were locked in every single practice, every single moment we could have been, and the coaches were locked in, which made it very possible. The team was locked in, which made it very possible. And the intensity and the energy of this team that they give every single day, every single game, is so contagious that it makes me want to work harder and harder every single day.
The big moment, obviously, being there in overtime, not aside from your big moments with, I think you had 10 saves in that game, but talk to us about the feeling that you felt and the team coming together when the shot from Cassidy hit the back of the cage.
It was ecstatic. You literally just felt the whole stadium light up. Everyone was just so into that game. We had everyone on the edge of their seat, which kind of makes it nerve-wracking, but in the same breath, it makes it so much fun. When Cassidy Morrison scored that goal, it was just such like a big relief on my end and defensive end, but at the same breath, like, we knew that we could do it. Like, we always felt that we could do it, and we just went out there and did our thing, and we showed everyone we could do it.
Taylor, you mentioned something in your introduction that you had played field hockey for way too long, or your whole life, or whatever your phrase reference was. What's your favorite part about playing field hockey? And, you know, why have you done it for so long? Because you're good at it, or because there's something else there?
You know, I have always felt something like I don't know what it is. I just like always had some weird connection with field hockey that like every sport I tried other than field hockey, it wasn't anything like field hockey. Like, I've just had like this weird connection with it, and it's hard to explain, but I've been doing it for like 15 plus years. Like, just like my mom played field hockey in middle school and high school, and like I grew up with a stick in my hand, so like it just came natural to me. And the atmosphere of field hockey is absolutely insane right now. Like, every year you're just seeing the pace of the game change year after year after year, and that is so exciting to see, because when I was little, like, it was only about like an East Coast sport. There wasn't really much anywhere else on the other coast, but now like this sport is growing so well, and I'm just so excited to see what it has in store for years ahead of us.
Tell me that you had the opportunity to watch a little bit of it in the Olympics, I hope. And
definitely.
And if that's true, who aspirationally is out there in the field hockey world that people look up to that are superb players at that level?
I know for me personally, the USA keeper Kelsey, she is just an absolute unit. Like, she is just so insane in the cage. Like, she, like, you can just see the passion and the grit that she has every single game that she plays, and I just would love to be able to show any type of grit or any type of passion like she has to anyone younger who is possibly looking up.
I love that description. She's an absolute unit. That's perfect. Because I've seen her play as well, so I've happened to have taken a couple of those games, taken in ODAC games for 19 years now. But let's go to a different type of unit. Come back to your team here a little bit. Talk about the ever-improving landscape that you've had with Shenandoah Field Hockey from not just maybe when you've started, but from when the program has kind of taken over with Ashley Smeltzer-Kraft, the head coach, and to what you guys are now, a highly ranked national program with what I assume are some pretty lofty expectations by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. So the team, before I even came in, like, they were just absolute studs. Like, they worked their butts off every single practice, and you saw that. And it was just, we just couldn't get our name out there all too well, and we have just continued to look up to those people that who have came before us, especially the 2016 team with them winning ODACs. Like, we have just always looked up to them just because we want to be any part of as special as they are. So I feel like this team especially, we have really tried to make a name for Shenandoah, but also with the poll, like, that's not like our biggest mindset of what we want out of this season. We want to, like, we like going up in the poll, but that's not our main focus. We like to take it day by day, game by game. Like, we don't try to necessarily focus too much on the poll, just because then I feel like sometimes, like, we can, like, just get in our heads and whatnot. But if we take it day by day, game by game, like, we just perform so much better.
Taylor, we want to say, one, thank you for taking time with us this morning, and wish you and the team the best as you work to wrap up what has been a spectacular start to the year as you get into ODAC play, and we look forward to following the Hornets throughout the 2024 campaign. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
JJ, it's so refreshing to hear, you know, directly from a student athlete in the ODAC, and the energy and enthusiasm that Taylor has for the sport of field hockey. And clearly, her teammates have made a great influence on her. I know that Coach Ashley Smeltzer-Kraft has done the same. And basically the product of what Shenandoah is producing there with their field hockey program is exceptional. And Taylor's certainly a fine example of that.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. You know, she was outstanding to talk to. The Smeltzer-Krafts know what they're doing coaching. I mean, we look at Ashley on the field hockey side. I think she's got one title and has been on the precipice of another one. But then Melissa Smeltzer-Kraft running the women's basketball program. She's got two titles, so there has to be some household, you know, competition.
Probably
there.
A little notation on the mantle.
Absolutely.
As to how many trophies are in the house.
Well, speaking of that competition, we'll get back to one of the features that we talked about we would be doing here, and it was me looking at 2 weeks of time for athletes of the week, so athletes of the 2 weeks, but I decided to make it even more difficult on myself. And given that we closed a month, let's do the athlete of the month for September here that we're working through here. So we're going to go through each of the sports here real fast. These are my opinions and extraordinary difficult to come up with them. So
the
know
disclaimer,
that
like in the car,
exactly.
Car dealership.
I'm going to cover myself here and say that there are any number of athletes that we could pick for any of these, but we'll go kind of in alphabetical order that we've got this. So let's look at cross country first, women's cross country. My pick for athlete of the month was Kayla Werner. She's a two-time ODAC AOW winner, athlete of the week. She's got the best 5K time in the league. Now, I was looking at other people who else this could have gone to. I mean, there's a big three at Bridgewater right now between Emily Smeds and Taylor Myers and Mackenzie Young, who've been really good. And Olivia War has also been very good at Washington and Lee. We'll see how this kind of shakes out as we get through there. But right now, my pick is Kayla Werner. And on the men's side, this one was a little clearer for me. Chasen Hunt from Lynchburg put in a top 10 showing at the national meet. I think they called the John McNichols invite where they were out there, but it was at the championship course. And as you'll hear later on, we got a chance to talk with Chasen today as well. So that should be a good conversation with him for you all to hear. Field hockey, defense. I could have gone a couple different ways here. We got some goalkeepers that are two-time goalkeepers of the week in Berkeley Miller from Virginia Wesleyan and Valentina Ambrogi-Torres from Randolph-Macon, and they certainly would be deserving as well. But I'm going with Taylor Swan, who we just talked to. National Player of the Week, being the number two team in the country, has top statistics in the conference here right now, looking at some of those, you know, save percentage and goals against average and what's coming through. So good for her. And then her teammate Cassidy Morrison is a three-time Player of the Week pick. She's got four goals that are considered the game winner, and she scored the winner in OT against Salisbury. So she's my pick for the Offensive Player of the Week as well. You know, Brad, when looking at football now, I think the athletes of the month, athletes of September, over those three games that everybody has had, I think is a little difficult, a little bit of a different story maybe than some other sports. Offensively is probably the easiest one for me to look at, even though that still was difficult, with some good quarterbacks out there. Stephen Hugney from Shenandoah, Carter Cito from Hampton Sydney doing some really good things. But I'm going to go with a different Tiger, and I'm going to pick wide receiver Ethan Doughty. He had four touchdown catches in a game against Center College that tied the ODAC record, tied the Hampton Sydney record, records held by, I think, Kyle Vance and Drew Smith at Hampton Sydney. So that would be offense for me. Looking on the defensive side, I got two guys that are really in my head here. They're both linebackers, Matt Conroy from Shenandoah and Daniel Eliasek from Randolph-Macon. Both of them were on the D3Football.com team of the week. I think the one I'm going to pick is going to be Eliasek by just a hair, and that has to do with his overtime ceiling victory with the fumble force that he did against Hobart College to win that game in overtime 14-7. And then from a special team perspective, I think I'm going to go kicker on this one. I had an opportunity looking at some of the return men. Brendan Robinson, really good from Bridgewater, 37.7 average on six kickoff returns so far. One he took back 96 yards for a touchdown. So that's what he does. He's really good at that. But I think with the 22 points that Scott Martin and Seth Deaton have put up as kickers for Shenandoah and Ferrum, respectively, I'm going to go with Seth Deaton on this one. He's 5 of 5 on field goals this year. He's got a 42-yarder that's pumped in there. He's made 7 extra points. I think he's my pick as the early special teams player of the month, but that one also obviously really close with those other guys I talked about. On golf, we know how good ODAC golf is, and we get to see a lot of that coming up here in the spring. Very hard on the men's side to pick, you know, who's the golfer of the month right now. And we included the most recent tournaments completed, which finished on Monday, maybe Tuesday. So I'm going to cheat and call that part of sure. September. But we've got guys like Jonathan McEwen and Will Braxton at Washington Lee who have been excellent. But I picked Killian O'Reilly, who just won but finished third in the most recent Invitational, the Gate City Invitational down there in Greensboro. That was there were 17 teams that competed, 18 on the leaderboard because Greensboro put in a B team as well. But all 17 of those teams are either ranked or receiving votes toward the national ranking. So arguably, until they get to the national tournament, this could be the hardest field that they go up against, depending on where you look at it.
So really interesting. I think that tournament was held where the ODAC Championship's going to be played.
Yep.
Moved from Starmount, which had some issue with one of the, maybe some turf issues, and they moved the tournament to Forest Oaks, where the ODAC Championship will be this spring. I heard from one of our golf coaches yesterday talking about it felt like the golf course was in really good shape. They had had some issues with rain and water with some of the bunkering, but most importantly, the scores were low, and it could be the time of the year. It certainly wasn't that it was dry. It was soaking wet. So, you know, I told him, you know, maybe we'll have to dial back the distance a little bit and try to get some of those old pins from the old PGA days to try to keep that thing level. But certainly looking forward and glad that our student-athletes had the opportunity to play and get a round in the fall for those that were in that tournament.
And on the women's side, you know, I look at – I think we may talk about a little bit about Randolph-Macon women's golf a little later here, but I'm going to be on Lily Hall for this one here. Two-time player of the week. So has Alexis Haller from Randolph-Macon. Three starts for the Yellow Jackets. Three top 10 finishes at some pretty good tournaments so far this year. So they're playing well. Washington Lee continues to play well. We've got some players on some other teams. Or also, I look at Sophia Martone from Bridgewater, who won a tournament, who, you know, you can argue with me whether we should have picked her as the athlete of the week that week or what happened in a different field. There's a lot that goes into that: field size, strength of teams, all that good stuff, what the opponents were like, how difficult the course was, all that. But she has played very well. So I think both men's and women's golf, when we get to the spring here, assuming everything translates and nobody falls asleep during the winter break, that we should be in good shape. Looking at the soccer side of it, again, these are very tough. The defensive side, I'm going with Adam Braithwaite, who is the goalkeeper for Randolph-Macon. He's got the most saves in the league, the second most shutouts, and the third best save percentage with his two Player of the Week awards, the Defensive Player of the Week awards. On the offensive side, a little tougher here. Trey Widrick from Bridgewater is my pick at the moment. Two Player of the Weeks, two game winners. But there are lots of guys who could go in here. I want to give a special shout-out to Wamey Egbe from Washington and Lee.
You just wanted to say his name.
I know. I had to say it. I love saying that name, especially in my head, too, and I'm making sure I spell it right going through things, and I'm sure I've messed it up once or twice. But he got to 100 career points. Not sure what he did here in the midweek yet, as I haven't looked at all those results just yet. But congratulations to him, at least by the weekend, getting to that 100 career points. He was the most recent Offensive Player of the Week. On the women's soccer side, we got some really good things going on here on the women's soccer side. We might talk about some of them a little bit later here, too. I'm going to look defensively first. I'm going to go with WNL's goalkeeper, Abby Groff. Allowed one goal before last night when they beat Lynchburg 3-2. This is Wednesday night that happened, so still doing well. Had allowed one goal in 500 and was unscored upon in 520-some-odd minutes. Now that streak is up to 579 minutes. It has had a 182 GAA and a 933 save percentage. So the other thing that people look at, she only has 14 saves right now. So Abby Groff in the defense at Washington and Lee.
She must be taking the defense out to the dining hall occasionally.
Absolutely. No, it's just like quarterback and running backs taking the offensive line out, no doubt about that. Want to give a quick shout out though to Ashley Wuss though at Ferrum. She's got 42 saves and an 894 save percentage, as Ferrum is 10-0 right now after their victory over Regent yesterday.
It's one of the four things we've caught our eyes that
exactly.
We're going to talk about in just a second.
So Bree Bitts is my pick on the offensive side. She's got 28 points. She's got 12 goals and 4 assists, and that's the most by quite a bit compared to everybody else in the league right now. Now, obviously, non-conference competition, who people play, whatnot. There's some good wins on that resume there for Ferrum, so it's not – you know, some people would ask in a 10-0 record for a team that doesn't normally have a 10-0 record. This is their best start in 38 years of the program.
Fantastic.
You know, what type of programs are they playing? They've got a couple good victories on that resume. So I think there could be some surprises coming up here throughout the rest of the year. But the big surprise here is, I don't want to call it a big surprise, the big eye-opener, the highlight, if you will, is in the women's volleyball right now. Washington Lee is 17-0. Has beaten Randolph-Macon and Virginia Wesleyan last night already. So there, we'll talk about that maybe a little bit more as we get into it. My players of the September month here are Aaron Gray on the defensive side from Averett. Shout-outs to Vivi Vasquez, and who's the libero at WNL, and Brooke Murdoch, who's a middle for Randolph, both doing very well on the defensive side, both with digs and blocks. But my pick right now is Erin Gray. She's the leader in digs and average digs per set in the league, and she is the all-time digs record holder at Averett now. This being her fifth season, she's on a fifth year coming through. She'll have three ODAC years under her belt. I think she's really close to being the first Averett player that will get into one of those career categories that we've had, with Averett just being in their third year of competition in the ODAC.
She had a stellar career there for sure.
Outstanding. And then Hannah Smith was my pick for from Virginia Wesleyan for the offensive player. She was absolutely dynamite during the month of September. Three Athlete of the Week awards. She's a leader in points earned and in kills, both totals and average. So really having an outstanding season. She's also was very efficient. Now, that predicated on what happened last night at Washington, or against Washington and Lee. Not so great a match for Virginia Wesleyan overall, but happening at this point in the year, got a chance to right the ship, and we'll see what happens when we get to the tournament. But again, we'll talk more about that WNL volleyball team coming through. So, folks, that's the athletes of the month of September for you all, straight from me. Again, they're my picks. You want to disagree with me, that's completely okay.
I was hoping I could, but I don't know enough to be able to challenge you on them, so that's all right. We'll go with yours. I'm sure this is these are A-plus selections, and I'm sure our fandom out there will 100% agree.
Yep, and just so I can make sure I keep my job, now we'll pay some bills, because the next section that we've got coming across here is sponsored by our corporate champions that we have here. The ODAC has several partners that help augment our operations, including sponsorship of awards, championship environment atmosphere, digital ticketing and fan engagement, and overall enrichment of the student-athlete experience for the conference's membership. We thank our friends with Virginia Farm Bureau Insurance, Field Turf, Lumos, Jostens, Hometown Ticketing, The Daily 7, and the City of Salem, Virginia for their support.
Couldn't do it without them, and deeply appreciate all their commitment and everything they do for us behind the scenes. It's not just about writing us a check or giving us some sort of discounted rate. It's about the partnership with all of those individuals, and they've been super to us, and we hope that we're super back to them.
Well, now we're going to let you listen to somebody you probably actually want to hear from instead of, you know, Brad and I, maybe. But
sure.
But we got an opportunity, as we mentioned before, to talk to Chasen Hunt, who's a runner for Lynchburg men's cross country and track and field. Really an outstanding representative of their program, that national level, both the men's and women's program, started the season number 5 in the country. Lynchburg's men's, they dropped back a little bit after that national race, which we'll hear Chasen kind of allude to a little bit in his take on their performance at that event. But don't count them out for making another run, bringing the full team to the national championship at the end of the year, because really they have an outstanding group, an outstanding culture that has been cultivated by Jake Reed and Jim Spreckers, the head coaches over there. So let's listen to our conversation with Chasen from earlier today here on Thursday. We're joined by Chasen Hunt from the University of Lynchburg men's cross country and track and field program. Obviously, being here in the fall season, it's all about cross country right now. Chasen, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm happy to be on here. Thank you.
Absolutely.
For having me talk. I'm here.
Absolutely. We want to make sure that we get an opportunity to highlight, you know, athletes from across the ODAC as best we can. We've got 15 schools, so sometimes it gets a little hard to do. But when you got somebody like yourself who decides to go out to Terre Haute, Indiana, and put up a top 10 time in a very strong national field in what I would call the pre-championship meet for the NCAA championships coming up later this fall, as that's the course that we'll be on. You know, Chasen, talk to us a little bit about that. What went into the preparation for that? And when the results came out and you're sitting there, you crossed the finish line 10th, just what did that mean for you and what it does for you to spur you on the rest of the year?
Well, going into the race, like, we had pretty high expectations of, like, what we could do as a team. And, well, we definitely did not meet those expectations, but also that was sort of like our opener, so it's kind of like the floor of our season, because you hope to get better as the season goes on. That's kind of the name of the game, and then hopefully the next time we race at that course, we're like the best we can be and we're able to compete and perform on the day. But I definitely, like, I feel like across the board for, like, the team, we were kind of maybe a little, like, down, because we wanted to be able to, like, compete at the front and, like, be able to sort of compete with the Warburgs, UW Lacrosse, and North Central. But sadly, we weren't really able to do that. But I think like all of our guys, we all fought. It was kind of tough conditions out there. It was very humid. And like the day before, it was like 95 degrees on the pre-meet. So I think like given the circumstances and sort of where we're at with like training and things like that, I think it was like an okay day in like our eyes, I would say.
Jason, you talk a little bit about team culture, obviously the success of the Lynchburg program over the years. You know, what's made that so special? Obviously, you know, Jake and Jim coaching the group, but what do you, it's amazing to me to watch your group run, even at the ODAC championships when they run the passion. Everybody out there has passion. All of our student athletes do, but there's something special about that program culture at Lynchburg. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I feel like we always talk about the people who came before us. So there was kind of a group. We kind of call them the like Mount Rushmore of our team. So you think a lot about like Reed Sharkey, Andrew Hawk, Squid, and even like Sam Lanezza, Frank, Tor. Like these are kind of the guys who like took our program sort of to the next level. And instead of it being like all professional and all these things, like we're able to like sort of lock in like when it matters, but also like we're just a group of guys at the end of the day, because it's just running at the end of the day. So
I disagree with that. It's not just running. Yeah, no, I just run, and it's very painful to watch, and I don't go very far. What is – go ahead. Keep going.
I get what you mean. Because sometimes, like, it hurts, but you kind of – if you go into it with, like, the mindset of it's just running at the end of the day, it kind of takes off, like, the pressure to, like unneeded pressure, you know what I mean, to go out and, like, have the perfect race, the perfect normal run or things like that. It's kind of like this should be like a de-stressor almost, you know what I mean?
Sure. Exercise certainly serves as that. How did you get involved in long distance running? And what does it take to be great? And those are probably two really lengthy answers, but, try to do it in 30 seconds.
Okay. So, getting into running, I started to run to condition for baseball, and I just ended up falling in love with the sport. And over the time, as I've like grown in love with the sport, I've just realized how much consistency really matters if you want to be great, and also intentionality to every day, and how almost all of your life goes into running. And I think that's kind of another adds into like the culture of our team, and then also like what I've seen to like take us to the next level.
Just before we wrap up here a little bit here, Jason, we get to go back to Roanoke again this year. It's the second year for the ODAC championship there in back-to-back years. We've been there previously, I think probably before you were at Lynchburg, but you know, what do we like about that championship course as you guys continue to wrap up for that, and then 2 weeks later for regionals, and then hopefully a good position there to get into nationals again? But what do we like specifically about that course at Green Hill Park in Salem?
Well, it flows very nicely. And I feel like since we're from Virginia, a lot of us have raced there like in high school. So I guess we have like sort of experience on that course. And then also it's a very spectator friendly course. So you kind of have someone talking in your ear most corners, and it's very open. So you like, Jake can see us like throughout the whole course, and it's just, I don't know, it just flows very well. And also it helps that it's pretty flat, so you're not out there grinding too hard.
No, I was going to take the flat part. Yeah, I would have said that was a key attribute that would be in my favor.
Well, I'm glad also that we get the runner's perspective from you, because we're out there and we see the backdrop and we're like, this is great for photography, great for video,
yeah,
watching these guys do it. So Jason, we look forward to being able to see that come about here in a few weeks' time here now, because we're into October, so it's getting closer and closer as we move towards that. But look forward to continuing to watch you ramp up, see what you do in some of the future races here that Lynchburg's a part of before we get to ODAC. So good luck the rest of the season, man.
Hey, thank you.
Brad, it was good, as always, to talk with one of our student-athletes, Chasen Hunt, this time. Really great interviews by both of our student-athletes today. It's really good to talk to them. I think, you know, Chasen obviously had higher expectations for what they wanted to do out there in Indiana a couple weeks ago. But I think what they did, what he did, finishing 10th in that field, and what they're going to continue to do, along with Washington Lee in the league, Bridgewater in the league, Shenandoah, and some individual runners that we've got coming across, I really think we're going to be witnessing another great championship at Greenhill Park in Salem coming up.
I love that championship as long as it's not 50 degrees and raining sideways. Outside of that, what an awesome day, and what a great, and I think we mentioned that picturesque environment it is at Greenhill to go out and see the mountains during that time of the year when the leaves are changing color and have a picturesque opportunity and a course that I believe the student athletes enjoy running on. And it's a fairly fast course, provided the footing's solid. So we're looking forward to it. It'll be a great day.
Well, I love when you give me a segue about things our eyes are seeing, because we've got two more features for you folks, and the first of those being that four things that caught our eye. So something either with what we're doing in competition or maybe some rules that came about, but four things that caught our eye from the last 2 weeks or since we did the last podcast coming across. It'll be one of our consistent features that we do with you. And I'm going to start with something we've already alluded to a little bit here, which is Washington and Lee women's volleyball. 17-0, number 19 in the country right now. They're 7-0 in the ODAC, having beaten perennial strong powers in the league, Randolph-Macon, Virginia Wesleyan already. I think their next test, if you will, coming up will be Bridgewater when they get to go up with them. But they've got a non-conference test coming up with defending national champion Juniata. So that'll be
we'll have a little bit better idea where they are in the national standing after that, for sure.
It'll be a good litmus test for it. But of that 7-0 record right now, all seven wins are three setters. So they are 21-0 in sets in the league right now. So Brian Snyder, the head coach at Washington and Lee, has a history of great programs. I looked at the box score from last night against Virginia Wesleyan. Lots of players can stand out. We can pick them out there. But Grace Michener, 21 kills and 42 swings with zero errors, hitting, or I can't remember if it was 42 or not, but either way, the numbers are somewhere in there, hitting over 500 as an outside, which is outstanding. So that's one thing that caught my eye of one of my four things.
You know, I think we mentioned this previously as well, just the blazing start that Ferrum women's soccer program has had. Off to a 10-0 start, the best in 38 years of the program. We talked a little bit about it earlier when we were talking about your players of the month. Just happy to see that. Happy to see success. And certainly in programs that have not had win totals like that recently, it's super to see our programs continue to ascend to the upper levels of the league and improve on an annual basis. And we certainly wish the Panthers the best as they move throughout the rest of the 24 campaign.
Yeah, my second one of the four that we'll do here is the non-conference dominance that we've seen from most of our sports coming through here. Is that when I do the weekly reports, at least through the non-conference portion of the schedule, showing how many teams people won and or how many games people won, how many teams they beat. Most of those obviously from the non-conference slate. And I remember one week we did where football was 7-0 over the course of the week. It's a week that Shenandoah just happened to be off. But everybody had won against non-conference. It looks like what is happening with some of the sports where we have the unbalanced schedules and different components to how that they can go about and be creative with their schedules. The coaches and the teams are doing a nice job of not just finding challenging games, but finding games they can also win and putting those wins on the board, because that helps everybody out when we get to, say, our conversation in 2 weeks when we start talking about the NPI and what people are looking at for at-large rankings. So the dominance that we have seen from the majority of teams in the league over teams out of the league has been pretty cool to watch about how much winning is going on with the programs we have in the league.
You know, it's I'm sure it's going to tighten up, and of course when you start playing in the league, somebody in the league's winning and somebody's losing every opportunity to play. So looking forward to seeing how the dust settles as we head into the fall championships. I guess my last piece, which would wrap up our four things that have caught our eye, is really the fascination of seeing our institutions continue to add to their athletic offerings. I have the opportunity this afternoon to go to Randolph College and see their new dedication of their wrestling facility, which is a renovated building that's in close proximity to campus, actually right off Rivermont there in Lynchburg. And I'm looking forward to seeing kind of what they're doing with their program and how that program is going to grow. of course, several ads at Randolph coming up this past year. We've got wrestling. We've got men's volleyball. We have stunt as well. So a growing athletic program, a growing enrollment, certainly healthy enrollment figures from Randolph entering this year. So great stuff, and looking forward to kind of seeing how they've wrapped up that building and put a bow on it, and they'll have a chance to cut it down today at the grand opening.
Well, those are the four things that caught our eyes. There's lots of things out there that we could have talked about. You know, go ahead and comment on the social media here about the things that have kind of caught your eye over time and things that you'd like us to consider looking at. But our last feature here we've got is, you know, I was on the spot with the Athletes of the Month for September, so now we put the commissioner on the spot with a feature we're going to call From the Commissioner's Desk. Brad, you got 90 seconds. What is coming from the commissioner's desk?
I hope I'm going to try to do it inside of 90 seconds. I think a hot topic that we have had, JJ, recently has been just the need for athletic training. We talked a little bit about that with Taylor and kind of, you know, staying in the business and what is the division doing for it? What is the association doing in that space? And just this past week, Division III released a grant, a health and safety grant for Division III institutions for up to $2,000 per institution to help in various areas of health and safety, athletic training, professional development, talking about supporting mental health, substance misuse educational opportunities, and an EMR, you know, an electronic medical record. What a lot of people don't understand is those athletic training offices and training rooms run like a clinic. You are having rehab and injury surveillance and other things going on. You're keeping electronic medical records. You're exchanging that information with the NCAA related to injury surveillance. So a lot of important stuff and a lot of cool stuff going on in the health and safety space. And the NCAA is led in that in the SSI office there. Brian Hainline just left. They just hired a new director. So expect to see a lot of really good things coming from Indianapolis and health and safety. And super happy that the division and our institutions have the opportunity to benefit from this grant.
I think we're pretty good on your 90 seconds there. We'll give you a passing grade on that one. Well, folks, this has been episode 2 of the ODEC podcast. Next time will be in 2 weeks as we're getting closer to the rankings that will come out for the NCAA tournaments or NCAA championships. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We hope to be able to have Hampton-Sydney Athletic Director Chad Isley join us. He is on Division III Championships Committee. That committee obviously put everything in place for what the NPI looks like, for how they're going to select it, what the new focus of the committees is going to be without having to be on calls until all hours of the night selecting teams anymore. But now it'll be about the championship experience, bracketing, that sort of thing. So we may get into some of those conversations if we're able to get them on there. And we say if, because we just don't know what's, you know, the information that's going to be allowable to be put out there. But regardless, we should be pretty close to seeing the NPI rankings first posted for field hockey, for men's and women's soccer. Those are the first tournaments that, or first conference seasons that would end that have the NPI focus to it. So we may be able to bring that to you next time that we do the ODEC podcast. So for Brad Bankson, I'm JJ Nekloff. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.